Welcome to the Sense Making in a Changing World podcast, where we explore the kind of thinking we need to navigate a positive way forward. I'm your host, Maura Gamble, permaculture educator and global ambassador, filmmaker, eco-villager, food forester, mother, practivist, and all-round lover of thinking, communicating, and acting regeneratively. For a long time, it's been clear to me that to shift trajectory to a thriving one planet way of life, we first need to shift our thinking. The way we perceive ourselves in relation to nature, self, and community is the core. So this is true now more than ever, and even the way change is changing is changing. Unprecedented changes are happening all around us at a rapid pace. So how do we make sense of this? To know which way to turn, to know what action to focus on, so our efforts are worthwhile and nourishing and are working towards resilience, regeneration, and reconnection. What better way to make sense than to join together with others in open, generative conversation? In this podcast, I'll share conversations with my friends and colleagues, people who inspire and challenge me in their ways of thinking, connecting, and acting. These wonderful people are thinkers, doers, activists, scholars, writers, leaders, farmers, educators, people whose work informs permaculture and spark the imagination of what a post-COVID, climate-resilient, socially just future could look like. Their ideas and projects help us to make sense in this changing world, to compost and digest the ideas, and to nurture the fertile ground for new ideas, connections, and actions. Together, we'll open up conversations in the world of permaculture design, regenerative thinking, community action, earth repair, eco-literacy, and much more. I can't wait to share these conversations with you. Over the last three decades of personally making sense of the multiple crises we face, I always return to the practical and positive world of permaculture, with its ethics of earth care, people care, and fair share. I've seen firsthand how adaptable and responsive it can be in all contexts, from urban to rural, from refugee camps to suburbs. It helps people make sense of what's happening around them and to learn accessible design tools to shape their habitat positively and to contribute to cultural and ecological regeneration. This is why I've created the Permaculture Educators Program, to help thousands of people to become permaculture teachers everywhere through an interactive online dual certificate of permaculture design and teaching. We sponsor global perma-youth programs, women's self-help groups in the global south, and teens in refugee camps. So anyway, this podcast is sponsored by the Permaculture Education Institute and our Permaculture Educators Program. If you'd like to find more about permaculture, I've created a four-part permaculture video series to explain what permaculture is and also how you can make it your livelihood as well as your way of life. We'd love to invite you to join our wonderfully inspiring, friendly and supportive global learning community. So I welcome you to share each of these conversations, and I'd also like to suggest you create a local conversation circle to explore the ideas shared in each show and discuss together how this makes sense in your local community and environment. I'd like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land on which I meet and speak with you today, the Gubbi Gubbi people, and pay my respects to their elders past, present, and emerging. In this episode of Sense Making in a Changing World, I'm delighted to be in conversation with Alana Marsh, systems resetter, Wayapa work practitioner, and Aboriginal systems thinker. Alana is aligning systems of knowing, being, and doing from a place of abundance, health, gratitude, and joy, and is creating an alive Aboriginal hub in Inner East Melbourne in Victoria, Australia. She talks too of nourishing the nest within our own skin so we can nourish and influence others. I know that I certainly felt so much calmer and more grounded after talking with Alana for this hour. Alana and I are also part of the Regenerative Songlines Australia Network. Permaculture is the way I've found to apply systems thinking in a whole systems way. Wayapa work is Alana's. I'm so thrilled to be able to share this warm and uplifting conversation with you about living systems and living well and resetting systems. Enjoy. It's my great pleasure to welcome to the show today Alana Marsh. Alana and I have met through the Regenerative Songlines Australian Network, and there was a number of things that Alana was talking about in a recent meeting that just moved something within me, and I reached out to her to invite her to talk to the show, and she's graciously accepted to be with me here today. I'd like to acknowledge that I'm here meeting with you today from the land of the Gubbi Gubbi people on the edge of the Mary River, that's also known as the Mukabula River. And welcome to the show, Alana. It's so lovely to have you here today.
Thank you, Morag. I really appreciate the opportunity to have this chat with you. Is it okay if I add a layer to the acknowledgement as well?
Oh, please do.
I just wanted to, I've got a little candle here, and people who might be listening won't necessarily see this, but I'm actually just lighting a stick of Palo Santo, which comes from outside of Australia, but it's one way of clearing energy. And the acknowledgement to country is a beautiful way of sending vibration down to the earth. So I'm just going to waft that smoke over my screen as I send love and gratitude down to our collective mother, Mother Earth. And for thousands and thousands of years, she had the vibrations of traditional custodians, lavishing her in love, and that reciprocity that was created through dance and song and ceremony. And as Dr. or Auntie Anne Polina says, with our regenerative songlines work, you know, country actually gets a little bit lonely if we don't send that vibration down to her. So I want to invite all contemporary custodians to also think about the vibrations that they're sending down to the earth. And I would like for us all as humans to wrap a bit more intention around that vibration, because, you know, we have a whole range of vibrations that are rippling and echoing out, and sometimes they don't really come from a place of much knowing. They can come, you know, quite low vibration in terms of what they're sending. So I invite us all to raise that vibration, wrap that love around ourselves, those traditional custodians, and also that collective mother that we all share. And I love that I actually do this with Palo Santo, because, you know, this was introduced to me from someone who had spent a lot of time in South America. And, you know, 300 years ago, probably, you know, Palo Santo wasn't wrapping or you know, the tendrils of smoke weren't coming from Palo Santo on this continent. But we are in such an amazing point in time where there is so much going on, and there is so much influence and mingling, and it's quite a beautiful thing. And, you know, I just wanted to do that. So much love. I'm on the land of that Woiwurrung speakers lived, loved, and laughed on for thousands of years. And, you know, it's an amazing privilege that we have as Australians to embrace that legacy that we've inherited from those traditional custodians all across this continent. And, yeah, just a beautiful expression to be able to do that.
I was going to ask you, how would you open a Waiapa work session? And I feel like perhaps it's something similar to what you just did then, in a way.
Yes, it is. Similar. It's actually, I find myself to be someone that's sort of greatly affected by what's going on. And so I'm having to put some layers of integrity around the container of me. But, you know, often I have this amazing green sea turtle shell that was my mother's. And my mother passed away over 20 years ago. And so I reconnected with that after her passing. And it is just a beautiful shell, but I often use it in the early days when I was sharing Waiapa, and, you know, sort of, because when I hold it on my over my belly, it reminds me of when I was pregnant myself. And it's a you know, there's something amazing about having that exoskeleton on the outside. Anyway, what I would do is actually flip it over, and it's actually like a bowl of humanity, as well. When you look at that turtle shell, and I said, you know, WAIAPA really resonates for me because it doesn't ask us to all become homogenized and all the same. If we were to look at that bowl and, you know, all the different diversities, the different genders, the different cultural backgrounds, just all the different things that make us unique and special. If we were to make a fruit salad of that in that bowl, you know, no one gets to lose what it is that makes them unique. And you know, when you, you know, you have a contribution into that fruit salad that's from a certain place, it retains the color and the flavor. And, you know, when we have smoothies, and, you know, I'm not saying smoothies are bad, but, you know, they're quite similar. Every mouthful tastes the same. And so I love the fact that WAIAPA allows us to retain what it is that makes us unique and special, but we can all coexist, you know, in some level of harmony and, you know, connectivity and moving forward. And as you know, Morag, I'm sure that, you know, often the best part of the fruit salad is the juice that's left in the bottom. They're commingling.
You have just created this most beautiful image in my mind. But it that description is so amazing, because so often we're trying to homogenize everything, aren't we? Trying to make it all together and the same and make us fit. But we can be together in that diversity and uniqueness.
Yeah, and I think we know from, you know, systems thinking, like living systems as opposed to artificial systems, because, you know, artificial systems rely on algorithms and knowing how things will act and respond in a certain situation. And, you know, it can become, you know, problematic when there is a little bit of deviation and, you know, the artificial system goes away or implodes upon itself. Mm-hmm. Whereas living systems actually, they get their integrity and strength from that diversity, you know, that everybody has a role to play, a contribution to make. And so, you know, living systems require that, you know, and we see, you know, I think through this whole, you know, stuff that we've got going on with COVID is just, you know, it's a really interesting, When the sun came up this morning, we were part of our sixth lockdown here in Melbourne. So I'm still processing, you know, what that actually means. And I just think, anyway, with the living systems, it's that diversity that gives us integrity and ability to continue evolving and keep on moving forward. Mm. So, yeah, I love, you know, and I was doing some work with WAIAPA with adults that live with various abilities. And, you know, that's one of the things that I really love about WAIAPA as well, is that it's so accessible regardless of who you are, where you are, what your language is, your physical ability, even how, you know, society might say, oh, your cognitive ability is at a certain level. As soon as I was able to take it out of my head, drop it down into my heart and connect on that level, it was just such a delightful, beautiful experience. And we all retain that. We all have that need. You know, we strive for connection. We strive for things that nourish us. You know, we strive on love and abundance. And it's been such a privilege to share WAIAPA.
Mm-hmm. So can you tell us a little bit more about what it is? And maybe many of our listeners haven't come across it before. Where did it come from? And what is it and how is it practiced?
Yeah, so it's a wellness modality. I call it a species-centered wellness modality that draws on some of the wisdoms and strengths from Aboriginal Australia, First Nations around the globe, really, that is has a very warm embrace of everybody through a whole range of messages. And, you know, we understand the earth as the enabling platform for mind, body, spirit wellness. So WAIAPA was created by Jamie Thomas and Sarah Jones in 2014. And Jamie is a Gunditjmara Gunai man from here in Victoria. And Sarah lived in Canada till she was about 14, and she's of Welsh background. So they have woven together their different strengths and created this beautiful wellness modality that enables the transmission of intergenerational well-being. Mm-hmm. And when you think about, you know, we have you know, some of the world's oldest living cultures here on this continent, they, you know, that for me, that's the evidence that, you know, they knew about how to live well, how to thrive. And it's been packaged in a way that it's readily digestible in lots of different settings because, you know, like most First Nations ways of knowing, being and doing, it's extremely holistic. And we all have a connection to the earth. You know, we all see the same sun, we all see the same moon, regardless of where we are on the planet. So it's one of those gifts that's been birthed from this continent. And it uses 14 elements to connect with the magic that the person has residing within. And, you know, with the level of, you know, some of the fear that's around in society at the moment, the disconnection allows people a somatic reset to connect with the magic within their skin and then enables the activation of reciprocity. So to give, to receive, to feel a part of something bigger, to feel connected to, you know, the uniqueness of who we are and what our contribution might be out into the world. But then, you know, the feeling that you get when you look at the night sky, you know, when there's no light pollution around, or just even being in the ocean and having, you know, that beautiful salt water over your body when, you know, when the water is warm. It's such a beautiful biosphere that we are nested within. And we also have a movement sequence that goes with those 14 elements. So those elements, you know, it starts off with, I might ask you, do you have any idea where would you start with the whole magnificence and the majesty of what we are a part of? What would, do you feel like the first element might be, Morag?
Oh, touching the soil maybe, or reaching up to the, you know, like to the sun or the sky, something like that.
Yeah, beautiful, because that's two movements we do with the creator element, totally. And so, you know, everything starts with having been created. So Waiapo is beautiful because it doesn't say, oh, you know, it must be created this way or it must be created that way. There's a lot of room for that diversity of thought and opinion and knowledge that people have. But we know we have been created, you know, whenever we listen to our heartbeat, we touch our arm. So we pay respects, first of all, you know, to that fact that we have been created and, you know, allow people to think about what is the potential or the privilege that you have from having been created. And so, you know, we bring our hands up, and I'm just going to demonstrate this. It doesn't matter. I'm not going to do all of them because we can't have all of them recorded. But with this first movement, you know, first of all, we settle people into a pattern of gentle and purposeful breath. We know that the air connects us all around, but, you know, our brain can cancel out that when we're moving through air most of the time because we have so much happening. But we're we get people into that pattern of gentle and purposeful breath, recognizing that that's a connection point to everything around. We then draw our hands up. We're going to give thanks for all those systems in the body that are maintaining homeostasis. You know, and sometimes we can be so busy, we just forget. You know, we're actually just so, we just forget how amazing that we have, you know, the potential of the day, that we have woken up, that we have, you know, some sort of ability to make the movements that we do purposeful and intentional. So, you know, we draw it up and we take it up to the sky, just as you said, up to this universe, and we draw down. So, you know, we're giving out from within. If we have capacity, we share that. So we pay respects to all that is above, and then we choose what we draw down. So, you know, we have this illusion of skin and that we're separate to everything around. You know, we control and influence, and, you know, so there's that whole thing there. But we actually, you know, we draw down what we choose. And that's one of the few things that we can choose, what we control most of the time, what we actually take in. We then extend our hands out across the waters, recognizing, you know, that we have almost 70% water in our bodies as well. And, you know, that water is life, as they say, hashtag water is life. We draw in from across the surface of the planet. And as you said, we go down. and we scoop up goodness from below, and then we do a big wide embrace of everything that's around, and we honor the fact that we have been created by drawing in from all those different stimuli and things that might be going on what we actually choose. And, you know, it's been really interesting with I did myself like a real head thing when I was working with, you know, adults with various abilities. I thought, oh, creator, what will I do? And, you know, just as I said before, dropping it down into my heart and allowing that connection to take place from there was a really profound, amazing thing to do. And there are 13 other elements that follow that. And it's just a really beautiful process to take people through that, and allows them to remember memories, a whole range of magic that they have within themselves. So really it's just providing the container for a prompt, you know, for a reset that is enabled through YAPA. And, you know, I can't thank Jamie and Sarah enough. It's such a profound gift.
How did you come to find it and dive into it so deeply?
I had known Jamie for about 10 years prior to doing my process of accreditation with them in 2016. And he had worked in, you know, different roles, and I was working in government. And we actually, I was working for Department of Premier and Cabinet, and we actually had him in for a NAIDOC event or something. And I thought, I was really drawn to it. You know, government can have some very bureaucratic, hierarchical systems. So, you know, quite embedded within that artificial systems way of being. And, you know, not saying that that's right or wrong. Well, I could, but I won't. because, you know, YAPA has really, really helped me see the importance of being non-judgmental. Yeah, so I really, you know, something within my whole being was very attracted to it. And then when they started offering to have this process where other people could start sharing it, and, you know, it's amazing. We've got about, I don't know, 150, 160 practitioners from all different backgrounds. Probably only half of them are Aboriginal. My background is Torres Strait Islander, so I feel like I've got this very unique position where, you know, government will put Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander together, but, you know, we know that it's quite different. But, you know, there's so many different Aboriginal nations across the continent as well.
This is something that I picked up that you said before, because often you hear people say, you know, in Australia we have the oldest living culture, and you said cultures, and I thought that in itself was a really interesting distinction, you know, that concept that, you know, that there's this sense that there's just sort of one Aboriginal culture that was here, but was that there was so many. And I wonder whether you could talk a little bit about the difference between the Torres Strait Islander culture and the Indigenous culture of the mainland, I suppose, because you're also from, you've got family in Papua New Guinea, is that right as well?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I think, you know, it's actually all one land mass. It's just got water on top of it. And, you know, there are
some. I never thought about it like that before. That's, wow, you've just made my head explode.
So there are, you know, and that's the amazing thing about this regenerative songlines project, because you know, the Camino in Spain, that is a songline, you know, that people travel, and these, I don't know, you know, whether you call them ley lines or meridian points or, you know, there's no, I just get blown away when I look at images of lungs and river systems and, you know, the ripples and echoes of how, you know, life actually presents itself. So I was part of a small team that was showing a documentary on how Gippsland was colonised. Mm-hmm. So there was the formation of a Highland Brigade, Scottish largely Scottish people. And it was part of my, you know, because I've lived in Victoria for nearly 20 years, but, you know, grew up in New South Wales, born up in Far North Queensland. And I, you know, have had so many learnings through this journey. And people, you know, had held up a lot of these people that were performing massacres, you know, as heroes, and that, you know, they discovered Gippsland. So to really, really, it's extremely something, but I'm just not sure if I've got the word. But, you know, just a profound insight to understand that, you know, there's these cairns across Gippsland commemorating somebody who was, you know, quite significant in the work of the Highland Brigade. And, you know, it, through the showing of this documentary, you know, we had one event that was quite public, and there was a little bit of trolling that happened on social media saying, oh, you know, Aboriginal people, you know, they have riots and they do all these things. And I just look at how the sophisticated governance occurred prior to colonization. Because when you think about it, all these different language groups coexisting on one country, there was never in that whole time, like, oh, how about we take over someone else's land? You know, that whole extractive colonial sort of, you know, oh, I like, you know, we've been trading with them and we've been getting some goods that, you know, I really want to, would really like to have more of. So let's you know, do raids and have a war and take over that land. That never happened on this continent. And, you know, I don't think many people sort of realise, you know, well, what does that mean? It's just a, like an amazing thing. And I was listening to Bruce Pascoe one night, and he said, oh, you know, the story between the rainbow serpent and the whale shows, you know, there were some fundamental principles around how things worked, because, you know, this story is across not all, but, you know, some of the nations that were on this continent prior, and, you know, I expect they still are, but that the whale was a land-dwelling creature, lived on the land, and it actually started to sense there was, you know, there was potential for tension with the rainbow serpent. So it decided that, oh, I'm actually going to go to the sea, because, you know, that tension that might arise between the two of us has no fundamental good value for our, you know, continued cohabitation on this planet. And, you know, Western science has found that the whale has a pelvic cradle, so it did once walk on the land. So, you know, those things, and, you know, if you're guided by those things within nature, and, you know, we know there's some amazing stuff happening in the biomimicry space, and there's a whole, you know, whole range of things, but I just know that there are such wisdoms and strengths that are largely untapped, you know, by non-Aboriginal people in relation to, you know, how we could have all these different cultures. Yeah, and, you know, there is not one Aboriginal, you know, people say, oh, what's the Aboriginal word for such and such? And it's like, well, you know, there is not one Aboriginal word, because there's so many different language groups. And, yeah, through that diversity again, you know, that we spoke about at the beginning, you know, that the integrity comes from that as well. So, you know, we are so blessed to have been born in Australia, or to live in Australia, to have some opportunity as a contemporary custodian to progress, you know, some of these things. And, you know, there's been such trauma in Aboriginal communities from colonization as well, just to assist in a healing.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I think it's potentially a tricky space for non-Aboriginal people to be in, because, you know, sometimes if you've had the opportunity and the desire to learn lots, you can actually, and it's never, you know, it's never necessarily initiation or, you know, at that sort of level, but you can actually know more as a non-Aboriginal person than some Aboriginal people do about, you know, how things were prior to colonization and those riches and strengths to draw on. And, yeah, I think it's a very, you know, potentially, well, very interesting, but, you know, potentially a difficult space, you know, to continue to play a role in the healing, as opposed to, you know, sending someone, having someone think, oh, I'm I've lost everything.
So what does it mean to be a contemporary custodian? I heard you say that in a meeting with the Regenerative Songlines, was it last month, I think, and I thought it's such a powerful term. What does it mean to you? How do you think people can step into that space to fill that term, you know, like to be a contemporary custodian?
I don't think there's like a blanket understanding of how that works. I think, you know, that it starts with, you know, going back to that creator element with the potential of that person and the source of, and, you know, the fact that they will receive energy and they will pass on energy. So I think, you know, having that very much, you know, the essence of who you are, having a deep appreciation of that is probably the first step for anyone wanting to step into that space. And then I think, you know, having that understanding of the echoes and the ripples that exist of energy. You know, I love the fact that, you know, we have a very similar amount of water in our bodies to what is on the surface of the planet. You know, so we can often find ourselves being affected by the moon in the same way that the high tides and things like, you know, things like that actually happen. So understanding that movement of energy around. And then I think it's around having faith and giving more energy towards the ability that we have to be self-organizing. You know, because what I could do would be different to what someone else could do. And yeah, so there is not one sort of way, but I think it all starts within the skin, then understanding those ripples and echoes of energy and how to determine, you know, whether this is something that you actually want to pass on or whether it's something you want to release. You know, and I think water's got an amazing ability. I was just thinking before, you know, we're just in the middle of running. We've just wrapped up one YAPA training process and we start another one on Monday. You know, and I sort of, you know, we were talking in the group about, you know, about the amazing load that water takes. You know, that often we go to the beach or we go to a lake or somewhere, we look at the reflection on the water, and we might have a cry ourselves or, you know, but there's never a saturation point that it reaches. And then someone said, oh, you know, I actually think the water has this ability to, the wind has this ability to clear us, to cleanse itself as well, to release. And I was just thinking this morning, you know, because sometimes, you know, in urban settings or maybe in other settings as well, but you see plastic bags flying in the sky. And it's such a, you know, not a good sight. But then, you know, I suppose the wind releases that when it stops moving it around. And so, you know, sometimes we can see people not even being aware of what they're passing around. And it picks up speed and momentum and becomes bigger and uglier than what it needs to be. Whereas if we're able to release that with intention to actually let it go, you know, I think that's the sort of, you know, the middle step in being that contemporary custodian. And then, you know, people definitely looking at, you know, well, what's in my space? What am I connected to? And, you know, how do we increase our agency as individuals, but also as a collective to become that self-organizing system? Because I think that's the only way. I think that's what nature tells us. You know, there is not one. Yeah. It's so based on watersheds and so based on, you know, bioregions, and it's not, yeah. And, you know, I see such movement of people today, and I think, oh, if as long as I was thinking about, you know, oak trees, and, you know, across the road from my house, there's a park with oak trees in it. And I was thinking, oh, you know, there's so many trees that have been planted there that aren't from this country, but I can understand why, you know, those people wanted to feel familiar, something familiar, to feel safe, you know, connecting in with those ideals, those values are inherently needed by all of us. So, you know, as soon as, you know, we become toxic and say, oh, we want to rip those out and put in native trees, it doesn't honour the fact that, you know, we all have this evolutionary need to feel safe, to feel familiar, and that, you know, actually doing that sort of action can be a toxic thing to do. So it's I don't know if I'm making much sense, Borat.
Yeah, totally, absolutely. It's actually a very it sort of opens up of a world of feeling of an acceptance in a way, you know, and that connectedness through that acceptance that we all have these ways that we ground ourselves with intent. And but how does that happen without it being a colonizing force? How does it happen gently, and how do we embrace what is here now and move forward in a way without the, well, I don't know, can it move forward without the anger? And I guess that's what you're like, your this way up work is doing is finding that intent and sending out those ripples without that sort of the toxic energy there, because you're saying what comes out then can be amplified and make a difference. So taking responsibility of what is emerging from us individually and as a community, I suppose. Am I kind of?
Yeah, that was
did a great. Did that land right?
yeah, that was awesome. And you know, I think about that whole idea of anger, and I just think it's really that third force of energy. You know, often when we have, you know, someone saying this and someone saying that, opposing views, dichotomy of difference, that, you know, the only way that, you know, a lot of times people can progress that is to add another layer. You're not hearing me, or this is this. And then it just escalates crazily out of hand, and somehow, you know, not letting anyone off the hook necessarily. It's not about saying, oh, that's just the soft option, or that's just giving people an out card. It's actually just creating that space to have those conversations that might be difficult, to have those expressions of how things work, to change the way that, you know, we give access to all the privilege that we have here in Australia. But it can never really happen while there's just that escalation where things just get out of hand, you know. And that's why I think, you know, when that's going on, that whole escalation point, that's almost like when we become like ice cubes, you know, so that water in our body becomes locked down and, you know, it's just a, you know, very, very brittle, and there's not until you're able to release that somehow, to have that ice melt a little bit, that there can be that mingling that creates that, you know, fruit salad juice down the bottom. Because if everything stayed locked down, and, you know, it wouldn't get that opportunity to mingle. And so, you know, it can be, yeah, I think it's a very interesting path. I think we've got an amazing couple of years ahead of us.
So part of what you talk about is this systems resetting, you know, that, well, that's actually a big part of what you're talking about like resetting sort of knowing and being and doing. So I'm hearing that at this sort of this personal and local level. How do you see that happening at this level that we kind of, you know, maybe an Australia-wide level or global planetary level, that reset? Like, what is that reset that we need at that scale? And how, what's your sense? I mean, there's, you know, time is this hugely complex notion, and you know, there's this deep time, and you know, we're feeling time right now. Like, there's all these conversations about, you know, 10 years, 12 years, you know, by 2050, by this, it's like this, we feel like this compression that's happening right now. Where does the sort of the systems resetting thinking enter into this conversation around what's going on now and how we can systems reset everything. that's an everything question. I don't know. Feel into wherever that feels comfortable to respond. Sorry about that. That was a bad question. But anyway, never mind.
No, it's a good question because I grapple with that one myself, and I think that because of those ripples and echoes, that we have so many echoes happening within our skin, I feel like, there's that individual well-being, but, we have to have that momentum where it's joining up into collective well-being, and it will happen in different ways in different places. But, I think that connection to Earth is such a accessible, such a profound, such a simple thing. But, there are a lot of pressures for it to be disregarded or, to allow the disconnection to continue. So I sort of kind of feel just at this point in time that, it's really about creating that island. And I think Marg Wheatley? She talked about the islands of sanity within the skin, and that hopefully, we all join up and we create this momentum. And because it's all based on, those self-organizing principles, it's going to look different in different places. But I kind of feel that I'm seeing it, that it's happening. So I have hope. Mm. I have faith. But exactly how it's going to happen, I'm not really sure because it's much bigger than me.
Yeah. So in the resetting and that connection to the earth, connection to country, I feel somewhere I think this is what drew me in many ways to permaculture, a few decades ago, was this deep possibilities of finding a way to connect with the systems which support us. And it started with me as a very kind of intellectual activity of finding a way to make a difference and, relocalize food systems, all these, like it was a very intellectual activity. But the more that I've delved into it, and I kind of enter into the space now and feel like I am the garden gardening, and when I'm in the garden, I'm barefoot because the sensory notion of like, well, the texture of the heat and the moisture of the soil, I feel it. And it becomes this incredibly intuitive way of being. And as the garden is evolving around me, that the diversity and the richness is also evolving, and I'm starting to notice things, like the changes of the seasons with the different birds that come in, which, indicates in my garden, a change of, now it's time, well, the mulberries are coming because this particular bird's arrived, and I know that, and it comes every year, and it has for well over a decade now. And so there's this sense that, through permaculture we can find this deepening and this understanding. So it might start in one place, I want to grow my food, but as you enter into it, or you want to find a way to reduce your ecological footprint, and so you're relocalizing your life. And then as you get like these different layers emerge and you just deepen into it. And so, I wonder whether there's other things that you've come across similarly that, you've found people have talked about in the work that you do that are kind of almost like tools to deepen relationship.
I think what you speak of is very beautiful and evocative, and you've opened yourself up, and you everyone has potentially different access points to this sort of, awakening. And I suppose it's a continual process, and so many layers with it all. And Yeah, I sort of keep going back to, because I'm still, you know, learning lessons myself, but, you know, we can only be open to the lessons of the future by having some sort of peace and connection with within self to outside, outside of self. So, you know, that whole, you know, that's, yeah, an extremely powerful thing. And, I, you know, it very much is about the layers. And, you know, once, you know, sometimes you get the opportunity to go back and actually sit within a layer or be within a layer that you thought, oh, you know, the last time I had this amazing, quite big experience in that space, but you know, I'm being sent back in some way. So it doesn't have, you know, it's not a linear line, you know, that whole idea. And that, you know, those concepts of deep time that you were talking about before. But I just know for self, like for me, that as soon as I, yeah, it's very much about keeping alive that vibrancy and that aliveness.
Mm.
As you know, as soon as I start to become a little bit fearful or questioning, you know, this, or someone tells me, oh, that's a crazy thing. And it's like, as soon as I start subscribing to that, it's a slippery slope for me. I had two strokes in the limbic region of my brain. So I had two clots that came to the top of my brain stem. And so it's the part of the body that maintains your systems in your body. And I've had probably two experiences since then. And, you know, I've been doing all this stuff to work with the neuroplasticity of my brain and, you know, reduce my vulnerability to hearing that little voice that says, oh, you know, is this the right thing, or is this whatever? And that's it's a really, can be a really ugly expression of the Alana Marsh that I, you know, don't really want to be. And I think that it's something that I'll, you know, continue to unpack further and actively try to address that. But I think, you know, that's probably something that we all have to work with in different ways, because, you know, we all have triggers, you know, little things from the past or what they might be, but, you know, that's just happens to be mine. And that's, you know, I'm sure I've got other ones as well, just between you and me. But, you know, that's a really big one for me, that whole, and that's why, you know, I'm very much about that layering, that essence of who I am and the potential that I can have in the world as an intentional link in that chain of humanity, you know, informed by my ancestors, but with love and hope for the future generations that hopefully come. And then understanding that sort of lateral movement of energy, and then working, you know, at that localized self-organizing way. And
I just wanted to ask you as well a little bit about you. I noticed that you also have some Irish heritage in you. Do you have any links at all with that? Do you identify at all with that?
I do. And I believe there's a huge resurgence of this way of being in the world over there as well.
Mm.
So I look forward to deepening more into that. I feel like, you know, we want to weave all the different strands that we have in our life tapestry, you know, because it's potentially a huge undertaking, you know, that we have in this moment in time. And, you know, obviously, you know, we have these ideas of deep time and, you know, we can be guided by that. But, you know, also we have places like the UN saying, you know, we need to make some drastic changes as a species within 70 years. And we have, and, you know, I turned up at the right time. So, like, you know, for this meeting, we're straddling all these different ways of being in the world. And I think anything that can nourish that intention and that manifestation of being that intentional link in the chain of humanity is what's called for at this point in time. You know, it's extremely exciting, but, you know, we've got some big work to do at the same time. So
mm.
I, yeah.
And in terms of this work too, with with, you know, some of the words that I've heard you using are things like reconciliation and reciprocity and what, like how, we talked a little bit about reciprocity, but how is this work, do you feel, helping with reconciliation, and in what way can we, I think maybe, can we accelerate that? I don't know if that's even the right word. How do we open up more to that?
I think reciprocity is enabled by giving, you know, that we need to give something to receive something. Mm-hmm. And so I think the reconciliation space is good, you know, can be very much informed by that as well. I think it's a potential way forward. I think I'm saying I think a lot because I'm just thinking as we talk, and this has been really good for me because just, you know, allowing me to say out loud some of the things that are in my heart and, you know, what I'm thinking. So, you know, just and, you know, often as adults we're worried about, you know, looking like we know everything, or, you know, we have this perfection paralysis and stuff like that. So I've been very vulnerable here and thinking through some stuff. But I think here I go again. you know, that whole weaving. Someone asked me earlier this week, you know, well, what does reconciliation mean to you? And it's like weaving a future together. Mm. So I know that, you know, some Aboriginal people don't like the word reconciliation because they think that it's reconciling or bringing together two things that were once joined, and, you know, they don't necessarily feel that yeah, you know, through colonization that it was a level playing field, or that, you know, they were just totally sort of, you know, decimated. So reconciliation is, but someone from overseas told me, oh, reconciling can actually mean just the bringing together. So I use that word not to say bringing together two equal things in a, you know, in a new way forward. It's just actually about weaving a future together.
Mm. Yeah,
because we are all here, aren't we? We all coexist, yeah. And, you know, that's the reality. And, you know, we will never go back to pre-colonization times, but we have an amazing opportunity. Mm-hmm. To weave some of those wisdoms and strengths from pre-colonial times, to elevate that along with, you know, existing and emerging technologies. But the piece that, you know, I find that we're missing a little bit is the activation of will. Mm. You know, people are either sort of so caught up in whatever the reasons might be, you know, we potentially have all the technology that we need. We can be doing things to respectfully elevate those wisdoms and strengths from Aboriginal Australia. There is just not a lot of motivation to come together to do that, I think. Some spaces it's amazing and it's there, but, you know, generally sort of speaking. And so we're at this very important point in time because, you know, political correctness will actually push those fertile places where that needs to happen away, and, you know, we won't necessarily know about it. And I suppose it's that whole thing around being authentic. Yeah. And, you know, and I just sort of think, oh, it's all, you know, it becomes overwhelming when I think about it like that. And I just think, oh, take it back to the, you know, what's within the skin, the source. Think about those ripples and echoes of energy. And then think about self-organizing systems and have faith in humanity.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. So my final question then is around the Regenerative Songlines Australia. And so that's something that we're both part of, and it's something that has some just amazing leaders there. What is that process for you, and what are you hoping that Regenerative Songlines Australia might be able to do as a group together?
We weave that future together. We weave us together in an authentic expression. We know that it's going to contribute to international momentum, which is amazing. I love the fact that, you know, we were asked to develop a roadmap, and we said no. Our songline process is so much more relevant for this continent. You know, we don't want that connection with the fossil fuel industry. Mm. So, you know, it's obviously going to work, you know, at that local bioregional level, but, you know, coming together from around the country and sending that energy, that ripple and echo of the energy is amazing. It's just, yeah, really, really, really exciting. And there's been such amazing, yeah, people that have been attracted to that and have been drawn to that. And, you know, that whole self-organizing principles around how we are set up and how do we keep it Indigenous led. And it's, you know, it's a process that brings much hope and joy to my heart.
Mm. Yeah.
Thank you so much for taking the time today to talk with me. I mean, I feel like my cup is full and running over. And, you know, just as you were speaking, a lot of the times, I don't know what it was, but I feel like a sense of clarity around me. Like there's a vibration, like there's something that I feel like I'm kind of buzzing. I don't know if that makes sense. But, yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you.
Mm. Mm.
So I'm passing on some energy to you. And I
know
you as well. So, yeah, it's landed in a great spot.
Mm. Yeah, thanks for taking the time. And it's great to get in. I often see you as another, you know, like we all get together in these Zoom meetings all the time and we're never in the same room and you just see these little headshots and little bits of conversation that happen. And it's so nice to have a chance to really meet and talk and chat like this.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for reaching out.
So that's all for today. Thanks so much for joining me. If you like a copy of my top 10 books to read, click the link below, pop in your email, and I'll send it straight to you. You can also watch this interview over on my YouTube channel. I'll put the link below as well. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a comment, and if you've enjoyed it, please consider giving me a star rating. Believe it or not, the more people do this, the more podcast bots will discover this little podcast. So thanks again, and I'll see you again next week.